That is beautiful. All the music has been beautiful. I've often said I would love to just to go to a retreat where it was just all music. I would love that. Okay, I'm going to take just a minute. Since this is a bird theme, I have to do this. My mother used to do this for us when we were growing up. Now you'll go, you just have to know my mom. She's hilarious. But she would do this. She'd say, Oh, wait, okay, I got my mic on. Yeah. Oh, little birdie, what happened? Oh, are you fail? Like, where is your home? You don't know where your home is? Well, do you have a mama? You don't have a mama? Oh, little birdie. Well, do you have a daddy? You don't have a daddy either? About sisters and brothers. Do you have a little sister and brother, birdie? No? No sisters or brothers? Oh, birdie, would you like to go to heaven? You would? Okay.
Okay. All right. That's all right. All right. All right. She's really not a sick mama. My mother is awesome, and so you know, you were talking about, Monica rode up with us yesterday. She's on the phone with her mom and her sisters, and you could tell they're slamming her all over the place on the phone. I thought, yes, another family just like ours. So thank you so much for the lesson. I'm telling you what, chalk full of scriptures. There's nothing you can, you know, when you need the Lord, you can talk to people, you can do whatever, but nothing helps the soul like the scriptures. Nothing does. Well, and we talked last night about the fact that we are, that we can experience the absence of fear under His wings. And, you know, and we mentioned that tormenting fear is not a good thing, but there is such a thing as healthy fear. You know that. And it's not necessarily bad. And as a matter of fact, it's very healthy to be fearful of electricity, okay, or strong currents of water, okay, all of those things. That's a good thing. And actually, if we have the right kind of fear of those things and we respect them properly, they're not a danger to us. As a matter of fact, they can actually be very beneficial to us. I mean, electricity is a good thing, but we have to, you know, we have to respect it. And same with strong currents of water. And so, and as ladies, we talked about how we need a refuge, we need a shelter. And boy, the lesson this morning, talking about our world today, our nation, you have it pegged. I mean, the use of drugs is rampant, but the use of drugs is legal, even in some places. What on earth is going on? And you know, the political scene could be downright scary. And as a matter of fact, and it's scary, just like you mentioned, for us. And it's, I mean, to me, it's extremely frightening just to think of the next generation. That is, wow, I mean, just to think of what they possibly could encounter. As a matter of fact, there's an article in the CLA magazine, CLA being Christian Law Association, and it says in this article, children today face an unprecedented spiritual assault. They are encountering challenges and pressures not experienced by any previous generation of Americans. Our national culture has become ungodly to a degree previously unimagined. Young hearts and minds of this generation seem to be hardening to the gospel and Bible teaching at ever earlier ages. That's what they stated. But there is hope, okay? And we can find hope for our children, and that there is one thing that we can give our children that I believe will help them survive. If I say our children today, please understand that what I'm talking about is the next generation. Our children as the children in our Sunday schools and in our churches, in our schools, in our Christian schools, those, you know, over whom we're stewards, if you would. And we watch for their souls, if you would. I know the pastors do, but the next generation is what I'm referencing. And this particular thing is something I've said for years. It is the greatest thing that my parents ever taught me. It is the thing that I am most thankful for that they taught me. And they've taught me many things other than squishing birds. They taught me other things. But I'm telling you, and this particular thing that they taught me gives me peace when the world is confusing. And so the greatest thing I believe that we can teach our children, that we can pass on to the next generation, and that is a benefit to us ourselves, is the fear of God. That's what I believe. As a matter of fact, Proverbs 14:26 says, "In the fear of the Lord is strong confidence." Is that interesting? "In the fear of the Lord is strong confidence, and His children shall have a place of refuge." In the fear of the Lord, there's refuge. And so, I don't know about you, but I want to pass on to the next generation the fear of the Lord. Now, you may say, well, okay, for me, the first thing I do when I am thinking about something is go to the dictionary. I love a dictionary. And in the Webster's Encyclopedic Dictionary defines fear this way. I love this definition. One of the definitions is to revere. Another definition is an affectionate awe. Isn't that good? That's the type of fear. God doesn't want us to have a tormenting fear. That's not it. It is an affectionate awe of Him. And so anyways, what I want us to do is I mean, there's a number of passages that we could look at that reference fear in the Scriptures. And as a matter of fact, that is a very interesting study if you study the fear of God. It's very interesting. So we just had to pick one. So I want you to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 6. And we're just going to look at this chapter in the Bible, Deuteronomy chapter 6. And in this chapter, Israel is fixing to go into the land of Canaan, and they're going to encounter a whole bunch of new experiences, and they're going to encounter new gods and you know, the world out there, and they're going to have some enemies, but also they're going to encounter some wonderful things. And so Moses is kind of preparing them as they go in to the land of Canaan, and he's kind of spelling out for them how they're going to be able to make it in this land. And so in Deuteronomy chapter 6, we're going to start reading in verse 1, and he tells them that here's what they need to do in order to make it in this land. They need to fear God. Look at verse 1. "Now these are the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord your God commanded to teach you, that ye might do them in the land wherein ye go to possess it, that thou mightest fear the Lord thy God, to keep all his statutes and his commandments which I command thee, thou and thy son's son, all the days of thy life, and that thy days may be prolonged. Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee, and that you may increase mightily, as the Lord God of thy fathers hath promised thee, in the land that floweth with milk and honey." And so he says, here's what's happening. You're fixing to go into this land. Keep this in mind first and foremost. You fear God and obey His commandments. And it, you know what? If you fear Him, you will obey His commandments. And so he goes on, verses 4 through 9, he just kind of delineates to them all the blessings that they will have if they do this, and that they'll be prosperous and such like that. But then he gives them just now, hey, now here's a word of warning, though, before he gets into it. And he tells them that there's some safety precautions must be taken, and that we need to, there's a danger. And so look at verse 10 now. He says, And it shall be when the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land which he swear unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities, which thou buildest not, and houses full of good things, which thou fillest not, and wells digged, which thou diggest not, vineyards and olive trees, which thou plantest not, when thou shalt have eaten and be full. Okay, look up here at me. So now what he's going to do, you can see that there's a pause in the sentence here, and so he's going to spell out to them how to live in this land in the fear of God. Okay? And so he spells it out. Now, at least this way I look at it. When I find things in scriptures, I'm like, okay, that's really good and simple, and I can grasp that. And so how does he do it? Well, we're going to spell it out. We're going to spell out fear. And the rest of the chapter will delineate this. So what's class? What's the first letter? Oh, you are brilliant. Okay. So the first letter, and we'll just take up in the very next verse. Now, he said, now when you get in there and you have experienced all these things that you didn't do to even earn it, okay, you've just been blessed by me to put you there, kind of like America. We're in a generation that we're not the patriots. We're not from the Revolutionary War. We didn't do all that work. We're just reaping the benefits, and here's what can happen when you get to that point. And he says, look, number one, F, he says, forget not. Okay, look at verse 12. Then beware, lest thou forget the Lord, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage. Thou shalt fear the Lord thy God, and serve him, and shall swear by his name. And so he says, the first thing you need to realize is you need to remember, you forget not God. You be careful. You be careful, because it's possible you could forget God. You might be like, I could forget God. Well, you know what? Have you ever gone through a day, and maybe I'm just revealing myself, have you ever gone through a day and you go, oh, I forgot to read my Bible this morning? You know what I did? I forgot God. I literally forgot God. Deuteronomy 4:9 says, only take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget the things which thine eyes have seen, and lest they depart from thy heart all the days of thy life. But teach them, here you go, but teach them thy sons and thy sons' sons. And you know, when I was little, my parents had to constantly remind me of their position. You know, and if you grew up like I did, you remember what the reminder was, don't you? Okay, could have been a belt, it could have been a paddle, it could have been a shoe or whatever, you know, whatever you, at the moment you might need. But you get those constant reminders. And you know, and here's the thing, I knew, buddy, if they said it, they were going to do it. That oftentimes struck fear in me, sitting in church and you hear, when you get home, you're going to get a spanking. Like, can we not have a forgetful parent for once? Okay. But, buddy, if they said it, it was going to happen. That struck fear in me. But it also gave me great confidence, because if they said, now, I love you, they meant it. You see what I'm saying? So they had to constantly remind me. But there were times, you know, as you grow older, you don't need as many reminders. And that fear and that reverence turns into affectionate awe, and you become like best friends with your mom and your dad. You become so close. And, you know, and you feel like you don't need it as much. But there are times, I can remember when we were teenagers, we went over to a friend's house, and that's where we were supposed to be. This is long before cell phones or bag phones in the car or any of that kind of stuff. Anybody remember that stuff? But that's where we were to be. And something happened, and my folks needed to get a hold of us. While we were at this friend's house, we were old enough to be driving. We're like, let's go bowling. But you know what we didn't do? Yeah, we didn't call and say, hey, can we go bowling, you know? They already told us it was okay to be with the friends, so we went bowling. Well, when they went to try to find us, they didn't know where we were. Well, we were quickly reminded that we're not totally buddies, you know, as mom and dad. And you know what? That was a good thing. That I had, and you know what? Sometimes we move along in our Christian life, and we need to be reminded, hey, now, he is still to be feared. He is a loving God, and we are to regard Him with affectionate, yes, awe, and to reverence Him. And that is something that we have to live out so that the next generation can see, yes, God is a God of love to be revered. Okay, and to be able to pass that on. Okay, so the very next letter, class. Okay, you are doing awesome. All right, and so we ended at verse 13. We're going to pick it up right there in verse 14. And the next thing is to, here's how you put into practice the fear of God. You eschew evil. Look at verse 14. Ye shall not go after other gods of the gods of the people which are round about you, for the Lord thy God is a jealous God among you, lest the anger of the Lord thy God be kindled against thee and destroy thee from off the face of the earth. Ye shall not tempt the Lord your God as ye tempted him in Massah. And so if we fear God, we will eschew evil. Now, one of the evils of their day were false gods. That's becoming more and more prevalent even today. That was a wicked evil. And he said, you stay away from that. You don't go anywhere near it. You eschew it. You get away from it and leave it alone. And so that as if we are going to live out the fear of God in our lives and before the next generation, we have to live in a way where we eschew evil, where we do not partake of it. Job 1:1 says, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright. Now, you know who said that about him? It was God. He said, he's perfect. Could you imagine God saying that about you? He's perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. 1 Peter 3:10 says, for he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek good, all the days of it, seek good and ensue it. So the proper kind of fear is the fear that, which is a form of love, will not only want to do what the Lord wants, but whatever is an offense to God will be an offense to us. You understand? So we have to look at it. So let me give you another illustration. This is, okay, I would give you one of y'all's illustrations, but I have not lived your life, so all I know is mine. So now what I'm fixing to say, I am not telling anybody what your standards ought to be. I'm just telling you the home in which I grew up, you know, as my dad was surrendering and going into ministry, and, you know, things were happening, and he didn't get saved till he's 20 and surrendered till he's 30. So there came a point in our home where he believed that we as ladies should dress like ladies and not wear slacks. And so, you know, that was not a problem, and except for, I mean, it was all right at this changing time, and I had a friend of mine who was a good friend of mine, and her mom gave me a pair of white jeans back then. I wonder why you would give a kid white jeans. I don't know. But anyway, and I, you know, it was kind of like, it wasn't like yet at this point in the house that you could never ever wear them again, but he was telling us this is kind of what the Lord was working on his heart about. And so I tuck them up in my room. And then I was going to go, we were going to go roller skating, and I was going to meet this friend. They were going to come pick me up, and I will never forget this. I knew my dad's heart, but he hadn't been hard and fast yet. You know what I'm saying? And I came downstairs with those white jeans on, and I will never forget, my dad didn't do nothing like that. He looked at me, and he went, and he went back to reading. He never said a word. But I knew my dad's heart. And from that time on, I thought, you know what? I love Daddy more than I love these things. And I didn't want to wear them anymore. And so what I'm saying is, if we have the right kind of, I loved my dad and I respected my dad, and if we have the right, and I'm not saying I was a perfect kid or anything like that, but at that moment I saw a broken heart that he could have laid into me, but he didn't. And God sometimes is very long-suffering with us. And there are things in his word that he does make quite clear. And he may not zap us, but we know what his heart is. And if we have the proper fear of God and affectionate awe, if he loves it, we'll love it. And if he hates it, we'll hate it. And that has to be lived out in front of the next generation so they can see this is how you live in the fear of God. You forget not, you remember him. You eschew evil. And then the very next verse we'll pick up in verse 17. And what's the next letter, class? There you go. All right. And that is to apply thine heart. Look at verse 17. And that means to apply something, you diligently devote yourself attentively. Okay? You diligently devote yourself attentively. And so he says, ye shall diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God and his testimonies and his statutes which he commanded thee, and thou shalt do that which is right and good in the sight of the Lord, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest go in and possess the good land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, to cast out all thine enemies from before thee, as the Lord hath spoken. And so he said, we have to diligently apply ourselves to the commandments that God has given us and apply those commands to our lives. Proverbs 2:2 says, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding. Joshua 1:8 says, this book of law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. And 1 Timothy 4:13-16 says, till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Neglect not the gift that is in thee, which is given thee by prophecy with the laying on of hands of the presbytery. And he says, meditate upon these things. Give thyself wholly unto them. In Proverbs 3:6, it says, in all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. So here you go. We talked about knowing the truth. We have to know these things. We have to know the commands of God. And if we're going to walk in the fear of God, we have to apply them to our lives. So, okay, here you go. One last illustration. Okay. You'll realize, boy, you must have really been a problem child. Okay, when I got into college, well, before I went to college, I was out of high school 3 years before I went to college, and I saved up and I got a car. Now, okay, just telling you, anybody, I'll know your age when you get excited with me. I got a 1976 Ford Mustang Cobra. Yes, sir. I can tell you that story. Wow, it was so awesome. So I got to go to college with a 1976 Ford Mustang Cobra. I mean, I drove that car all up and down these streets in Springfield. Absolutely loved it. Well, about my last year of college here, it was dying. I still to this day wish I kept that thing. And I, you know, what college money has? What college has money? What college kid has money to fix a car? Well, but I needed a car for the last year. So I just, my dad let me bring for the last year of college his, I don't know what year it was, and he got it. It was really, really old. That's why we never drove these things except they were old. It was a Lincoln Continental, okay, two-door, okay, we're talking a boat, you know, we're like, oh, you know what I'm talking about, and you know, when they made them so long out front, it's like you're driving skis, you know, I'm like, oh, my word, you know, and so, you know, like, all of a sudden, my friends weren't my friends anymore. Oh, and I hated parking that thing, all of that, and so when I got out of college, I'm going to get a little car. I mean, I'm not kidding you. That was my goal. As when I got out of college, as soon as I could afford a new car, it was going to be little. It was going to be really easy to get in and out of parking spaces. I didn't even care what kind it was. Now, my dad is a Ford man. That is the only thing he's ever owned his entire life. And he told us that we could have any kind of car we wanted, but he'd only work on a Ford. But at this time, I just wanted a little car. And there was a man, my dad was starting a church in South Florida, that or Central Florida at that time. So after college, I went down there because I thought I could be a help. I mean, I can't sing. I can't play. I could be a warm body in a chair. But I felt like the Lord led me there, and so I got a job teaching also at a Christian school, and there was a man in a neighboring church that he worked in vehicles, and so I went and looked at this little car. He had a couple of cars, but there was one that was really little, and I wanted it because it was little. It wasn't even a Ford. I can't even imagine. But And my dad was like, you know, now, you know, I'm 20, you know, 3 or 4 at this time. And so, you know, he's letting me kind of be an adult. But he kind of let me know that I don't think that's, you know, a good one. And so, but I bought this car because it was little. And at this time, there was an empty lot across the street from where my folks lived, which I was living with them on my own, making my big decision. So I parked that. I would park at night the car in that empty lot, just parallel to the street. And then my sister came home from Hawaii at that time and had the first grandbaby in the family, brand new grandbaby. And I drove her all around. Oh, it's just so neat to, you know, have a nephew and all of this. And but one morning I was going to go out to go to work, and I needed something out of the car, but so I told Rhonda, I said, it's out of my vehicle, go get it, you know. And she opens the door and she said, your car's not there, Pam. I'm like, what are you talking about? I parked my car there last night. And she's looking out the door, this is your car. So I step outside and I'm like, what am I? My car was like in the next lot down with another car attached to it. And a drunk lady had hit it the night before, couldn't unattach her car and got out and walked home. So I'm like, wow. And so I'm looking at this car, and do you know what? The tail end of that car, the bumper, was past the back seat and the car seat and past the front seat. And it had smushed that little car up to the steering wheel. Now, God was kind enough to allow me not to be in there, or my nephew. But, buddy, at that moment, I knew my dad's instructions, and I knew he had told me, you know, he had his reasons why. But I wanted what I wanted. But at that moment, I didn't just know it. I determined at that moment, I'm going to apply. And the next car I bought, number one, it was a Ford, because they are the best cars. But number two, it was a bigger vehicle, because that was what my dad didn't like about those little things. Now, it was not a boat, but it was a bigger vehicle. But my point is, if we are to walk in the fear of God, it's one thing to know what He says. It's another thing to apply them. To apply those things. And our children, the next generation, has to see us applying it. And they also have to know that, you know what? Sometimes if we don't apply these things, sometimes the Lord gives us warning. Sometimes there are consequences. And it's a fearful thing. But that is a healthy fear. It's a good thing. And then the next letter, class, is what? R. That's exactly right. We're going to go to the very next verse, and that is we need to rehearse His attributes. Look at verse 20. It says, and when thy son asketh thee in time to come, saying, what mean the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments which the Lord thy our God hath commanded you? Then thou shalt say unto thy son, oh, we were Pharaoh's bondmen in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And the Lord showed signs and wonders, great and sore, upon Egypt, upon Pharaoh, and upon all his household, and before our eyes. And He brought us out thence, that He might bring us in to give us the land which He sware unto our fathers. And so you know what He said to do? He said, now listen, when your sons and your sons' sons and your children, when they ask you, what does all this even mean? You say, let me tell you about God. And so you rehearse His attributes, because when we rehearse the attributes of God, my goodness, What a thought. Psalm 18, 1 through 2 says, I will love thee, O Lord. Here you go. Here is his attributes. My strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strength in whom I will trust, my buckler and the horn of my salvation and my high tower. He just goes through. And that's what David would do many, many times. He would remind himself of who God was. He was in some difficult circumstances, but he would go back and say, no, this is what God is. This is who God is. Isaiah says, hear, ye that are afar off, what I have done, and ye that are near, acknowledge my might. God says, you acknowledge that. And there's not many things that we enjoy more than reminiscing. As a matter of fact, the longer you go, the more you like it. But all of us like it. As a matter of fact, and we love to think about loved ones. If I were to point to you, like right now, right now, my older sister is popping into my mind, lives down in Florida, and I could point to you, and I'd say, who are you thinking of right now? Your dad. And I could point to, right there in the green shirt, who are you thinking of? Your dad. Okay, now your dad's not here right now. I don't know if they're alive or not, but they're not here. But what happens is when you recall to mind, when you rehearse in your mind that person, that at that moment, that person is first in your thoughts. And so the Lord says, now listen, when they ask these questions, you tell them about me. And when we're telling our children about our God, He is at that moment first in their hearts and their thoughts. And and the Lord knows, He knows that this is it's good for us to remind us of Him. And that's what God wants us to do. He wants to be first in our thoughts. And the way He is for us to constantly rehearse His attributes. Go over them. Now, so that's how fear is spelled out right there. He just spells it out right there. That's all of that. Those are good things to do. Okay, now I'm not losing my mind here. But there is nothing better than a cold cut sandwich. Okay. You're like, hello, we're talking about fear here, Pam. No, I know. Okay, but we're very close to lunch. There's nothing better than a cold cup sandwich. I personally love ham. Victoria likes turkey. I like ham, and I like mayonnaise, not Miracle Whip. Just divided the audience. Okay, I like mayonnaise, and I like lettuce. And pickles, and tomatoes, and salt, and lots of salt on the tomatoes, and then you have to have bread. Now, I personally am not a bread person. I do not care for bread, but it's like to me, it's like a necessary evil because like, how am I going to eat a cold cut sandwich without the bread? Or what am I going to put the mayonnaise on? So, but you got to have it, and the bread holds all that goody together. Okay, it holds the goody together. So to me, this chapter is kind of like a good sandwich, and all that stuff is really good in the middle. If we'll learn to forget not God and eschew evil and apply our hearts to His Word and rehearse His attributes. But He starts this thing out and He ends this thing this way. Look at verse 2. He says, "That thou mightest fear the Lord thy God." He starts out and he says, "This is what you do." You fear the Lord your God. And then down in verse 24, we ended in verse 23, and verse 24 says, "And the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes," here you go, "to fear the Lord our God for our good, always, that He might preserve us alive as it is this day." And so the next thing he says, this is a commandment. And now to me, I find this oftentimes in Scripture, not always, but oftentimes in Scripture, you'll find what I call a sandwich. And he'll say, you do this, and he'll kind of tell you how to do it, and then he'll say it again, you do this. And I've often said a commandment is like this. He says, you do it, and you say, well, you know what, sometimes I forget or whatever, or I don't feel like it. It's like I always say, if I tell my daughter, you go clean your room, what do you think I expect her to do? Doesn't matter if she feels like it. She better not forget. Okay? I expect her to do it. And God said, as I command thee this day to fear the Lord thy God. Why? that it may be well with thee, and to preserve thee. And so when our children face danger, and obviously in this world, they're going to, and in the future, maybe more than we ever did, but when they face danger, it is important that they fear us enough, revere us enough when we say, hey, get over here, that boom, they come. I mean, we all see the good in that. And it is imperative that we have such a reverence for God that when He says, hey, come here, get under my wings, that we come. And that we do, and that we heed everything that He says. And I believe if we do that as mothers, as ladies passing on to the next generation, it may look a little bit like this. The young mother placed her foot upon the path of life. Is the way long? She asked. And her guide said, yes, and the way is hard. You'll be old before you reach the end of it, but the end is better than the beginning. The young mother was happy, and she just couldn't believe that anything would ever be better than these years. So she played with her children and gathered flowers with them in the clear streams. The sun shone down upon them, and life was good. The young mother said, nothing will ever be better than this. Well, the night came, and a storm, and the children shook with fear and cold. But the mother drew them to her and placed her arms around them and covered them with her coat. And the children said, Mother, we are not afraid, for you have taught us about God. And that night, the mother looked up at the stars and said, this is better than the brightness of day, for I have taught my children courage. The next day came, and there was a hill ahead. The children climbed and grew weary, and the mother became tired and weary. But she smiled and she said, a little farther, and we're there. And that night the mother said, this day has been better than the last. My children have learned fortitude in the face of hardship. Yesterday I taught them courage. Today I have given them strength. Well, the third day came, and there were storm clouds that overshadowed the earth, clouds of war and hate and evil. The children stumbled and groped along the way. But the mother said, look up, lift up your eyes to the light. And the children looked and saw beyond the clouds an everlasting glory. And it guided them and brought them beyond the darkness. That night the mother said, this has been the best day of all, for I have shown my children eternity. The days passed, and the weeks, and the months, and the years. The mother was old, and she was little and bent, but the children were tall and strong, and they walked with courage. When the way was hard, they helped their mother, and when the way was rough, they lifted her. And at last they came to the top of the hill, and in the distance they could see a shining road with golden gates flung open wide. The mother said, I have come to the end of my journey, and now I know that the end is better than the beginning, for now my children can walk in the fear of God. And the children stood and watched. She went on alone, and the gates closed after her. But the children said, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of His saints. We will arise up and call her blessed, for she was a woman who feared the Lord and taught us to fear Him as well. If you want to save the next generation, teach them to walk in the fear of God, never to forget Him, to eschew evil, and to apply themselves to the truths of His Word and rehearse His attributes, and fear God with an affectionate awe, and you will find safety in the presence of fear under His wings. Let's pray. Father,